I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
He is Jamel White. Hello, Jamel. How are you?
Well, listen, let me tell you something, Doc.
Yeah.
Why do you got to go so deep in every time? Every time you go so deep, it don't even have to be that way. You could just announce the name and we just get to the work.
All right. So here's what we'll next time you come out, I'll be like, all right, welcome in Jamel White, former Browns running back, now coaches track at Riverside. Boom. Is that what you want?
You do what you got to do. You know what? Matter of fact, I need to get the radio. I'm going to try my best to get me my own radio show, and then I'm going to have you as a guest, and I'm going to just do it for a straight get back. And I'm going to find out whatever I want. I do have something on you, but I'm not going to use it yet. This is not the time.
Oh, man, don't go there. And he's on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. But I'm only talking about positive things the way you do. You talk about things in a positive way. Did I say anything derogatory about you? No.
No, nothing. But you know how I am. So,
because you get embarrassed. You know what? I want you to be proud of the things you've accomplished in this world. Just like you would tell your kids that are running track, right? You got to be proud to be better.
I would say that. So
see?
You're right.
So I have learned something from you over the years, haven't I?
I don't know if you learn anything from me, but you're right. I give you that. You're right.
All right, Jamel, let's actually have a serious conversation about the Browns for about 36 seconds here. If you're playing for the Browns right now, what are you thinking? I mean, they got two wins, and we're going to come back on the other side of the bye. Maybe a very winnable game against New Orleans, and maybe you can change the temperature, at least in the locker room. Help me understand what it's like to be in this position when you're on a team that's struggling to find wins and struggling to find an identity.
Let's see. I would have to get back to the basics, I guess, man. I would go back and just try and figure things out. Like, when you're a professional and you're playing a professional sport, you're looked at differently. So you have to go in, you have to take that mentality as, all right, my contract may or may not be up, but a team could get rid of you whenever they want, to be completely honest, unless you're really up there. But you have to start playing. You have to find something that you want to play for. If it's the coach, a contract, whatever the case is, you have to get it together, and you got to go back to the basics and figure out, you know, how do I stop? If you were one of the guys who are getting penalties, I need to stop that. Do I go with the quarterbacks and go in the quarterback room and kind of figure out what they're doing? Do I go ask for extra reps with the quarterbacks? Do I work extra hard? These are the things that would be going through my mind. And I would bring other people in with me and just be a leader of the team. That's how I would look at things.
What's it like playing for tape? It's just as a pro when everything's falling down and you're just looking around, you're going, man, I gotta look good because I got to keep this career going.
Man, so playing for tape is one thing. Like, I think, and this is just my opinion, when you're giving your all every game, regardless if you're winning or if you're losing games, you're always playing for tape. I mean, but you're trying to help your team succeed. I think they both go together. If you play well, regardless of why you're playing, like if you're tape or not, it just looks better. I remember growing up and from high school all the way to college, they used to say the eye in the sky don't lie. And it's true. Like, the effort that you put in, the things that you do, every year you're playing for tape, no matter what team you play for anyway.
All right, if you're Kevin Stefanski, I don't know, you're Andrew Berry, who spoke yesterday. I mean, how do you get through the rest of the season by I know you kind of alluded to it a little bit, but keeping the locker room together and not having people pointing fingers, and the other part is not having everybody looking and saying, well, it doesn't matter what that guy's saying because he's probably going to get fired at the end of the year. I mean, you've been in locker rooms like that before, I'm sure.
Oh yeah. I you know, I've been in a locker room like that. What was it, 1 year where, you know, my second year, our coach got fired, was Chris Palmer. He got fired. Then, you know, Butch came around and he started acting up, and then they got rid of him. So the reality is, man, you got to just keep it together. That locker room, it can separate a lot of people, you know. So if the environment becomes negative, it just makes everything bad. It's not a good thing. And you don't want to be around that type of negativity, because then it spreads out on the field. Guys are not happy. You know, they are then just really looking like, I don't care about nothing else. I just care about the tape that I do. I don't really care about what's going on. And you don't want that type of environment. And then from a coach's, if you're a player looking at the coach, I think Kevin Stefanski is like, he's one of those coaches that you do want to play for, one of those coaches that you do want to keep in-house. And even though it's sad, I truly believe that players have to do their part. But so much is put on the coach to where if I'm a player and I want to keep him around, I'm going to talk to the other players, be like, look, man, we love playing for this dude. Let's go out and ball out for him so they don't get rid of him. And that's what I would do. Like, dude, when we had Butch Davis there, people didn't want to really play for him sometimes, and they didn't care what the result was going to be. And it wasn't a good atmosphere to be involved in sometimes.
Former Browns running back Jamel White joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. I'll ask you a really dumb question, Jamel, that I've always wanted to ask. You ready?
I'm ready.
What does a professional athlete do on a bye week?
Oh, get your body ready, man. Most, you know what? I'm not going to lie to you. Most people go home because it's been rough and they need to disconnect for a little while. What I did was I stayed here and I lifted weights. I looked at extra film. If I was nicked up, I took care of my body. But that's what I did, man. Like, I would get ready for those next couple of more weeks. Sometimes people don't get a bye week to the last game, and I've been there before where you get a bye week at the last game. But
oh, that's brutal when you guys have that.
Yeah, I know, man. And sometimes it's like you do need to disconnect sometimes, especially when you're in the position that the Browns are in right now. You kind of want to get away from all the negativity if there's negativity around, and just disconnect for a minute and then get back on to take a couple of days.
All right, what's a great leader in the locker room when you're in this situation? Like, I would think folks are going to be looking at Miles Garrett. If you're a head coach, you got to pull that leadership team together, right, to make sure that everything is going in the right direction, because you know as well as I do, if you're young in a locker room, you're always looking to see who the elder statesmen are, primarily because they've figured out a way to stay in the league as long as they have and to get pretty nice paychecks, right? So what do you look for in a leader when it comes to being on the field as a player?
Somebody who's going to be positive. I think that's the biggest part. Like, when I look for somebody to be a leader and being positive and leading by example, and I think that's just the regular things that people should look for in a leader. And that's just not in the locker room. That's just in life in general. So being positive, having a good attitude about what you're doing, making sure that, you know, everybody's on the same page and everybody has the same goal and the focus. Even, you know, the guys that are playing for tape, making people realize, all right, listen, if you're playing for tape, these are the things that you're going to have to do. And I think they have guys in the locker room that's going to do that. I really do. I think they have guys there that actually understand that and are going to bring those younger players and be like, look, man, let's get it together and, you know, work as a team and try and, you know, finish this thing out strong.
Tell me somebody who was a leader that you played with so that fans can kind of get a feeling like, oh, I thought that, but now I know that's true.
Oh, Kelly Holcomb, he was a good leader. I've been around a ton of them. Roman Oban, Kelly Holcomb, Couch was a really good leader, man. Like, even when, man, people used to get on Couch, and like I said before, he went through the whole thing with people booing him when he got hurt and clapping and all that. Not one time did this dude ever just flip the switch like, man, forget Cleveland, blah, blah, blah. He was always like, dude, let's get on the field and do this. And mostly, the majority of the time on offense, because that's what I play the majority of, when you got in the huddle, it was always the quarterbacks that were the leaders, man. You didn't look to a running back or a wide receiver. The quarterbacks was the ones that got in the huddle and be like, hey, listen, let's get this first down. Let's do this. Let's do that. And that, you know, and that's why they get this money now, man. So when I was in the locker room, Kelly was big. Tim was big. Roman Oben was big. Orpheus Roy was big. It was a ton of them. Even Fuller was a big leader. So I've been around a ton of leaders, man.
So you play the position of running back in the NFL. You see things a little bit differently than the rest of us do. How do you think Nick Chubb looks, Jamel?
Well, let's see. I think, if I'm being honest with you guys, I just think coming off an injury like that, and I know he's had it before, the mental part of it, not wanting it to happen again, I don't think he's 100% himself yet. I think that's still going to take some time because, to me, he's not as explosive as he was before. And that's not that he can't do it. It's just that mental aspect of being hurt and then having to come back and taking hits. And now you're worried about people hitting you in your legs because he's a bigger back, right? So that's what they're going to do. They're going to have to go in at his legs. And nowadays in the NFL, Sunday, week in and week out, what do you see? Big tight ends getting their legs taken from them. Mm. Big running backs getting their legs taken from them. If they want to make a rule, that's going to be good. I don't think any DB should be able to come in with his shoulders lower than your knees. I really don't believe that. I really believe that they should, if they want to make a rule to help all this stuff, make that rule. Because they have rules for everybody else. Running backs can't run into DBs with their heads down.
Right.
You can't. You can't show them the crown of your helmet. If they come in and they're blitzing, you can't crown them up like we used to. So why can't they make that same rule? But for him, it's the mental aspect, man. I mean, and as a running back and being a person that was in that position, has been hurt before, getting past it mentally is the biggest hurdle, not the physical stuff.
All right, let's just and I know you're super positive, so I don't even know if I want to ask you this question, but I'm going to ask you anyway. At the end of the season, does someone have to take the fall for what happened? Let's just say that even if they only win a couple games this whole year, and maybe they win 4, 5, I'll be optimistic. Let's say they win 5 games and end up 5-12. Does someone end up taking the fall? And does someone take the fall? And then assuming that it is someone that's going to take the fall, is it Barry? Is it Stefanski? Is it Dorsey? Like, who do you think ultimately ends up taking the fall in the situation? It is the not for long league, and we all know that. So this isn't personal. This is business.
Right. And here, let me expand it a little bit bigger for you. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be a coach that takes the fall. It could be players that take the fall. Hmm. You could get rid of players. You could cut them or trade them away and be like, listen, if you weren't doing this, and it could be players that take the fall. So, you know, it does not have to be a coach. But to answer your question, yeah, somebody's got to pay. Somebody's got to pay for it. I mean, how do you justify, you know, 1 year you're just couple of years you're really good, and then next couple of years you're not as good. And I know everybody likes to blame the quarterback, and but the reality of it is the quarterback is the second person to touch the ball on the football field. Not the first. He is the second person to touch the ball, the center. But the reality about it all is you have to have all the pieces in place. You have to have a good wide receiver, got to have a good lineman, got to have running backs, got to have – football is the ultimate team sport. You can't do things just by yourself. So, you know, Deshaun was not doing well in certain people's eyes, but he's a different type of quarterback than some of these other quarterbacks. He's made to roll out of the pocket. The play calling is going to be different with him compared to a pocket passer. So it's completely different. So – with that aspect out there for everybody, you can't just look at it as, okay, it was the play calling. Play calling wouldn't be the same if you have a pocket passer. Well, it was what the defense did. Well, if your linebackers are fast or slow, that determines what type of defense you put out there. You know what I mean? So it's different.
Hmm.
But somebody does have to take on a fall.
All right, let me ask you this, and as I'm just curious. And as you look at football in general, just like the big picture stuff, you know, we talk about high school off camera. We talk about college off the camera. We talk about pros off camera. If you were going back through it again right now, and you were, let's just say, like you did at South Dakota, how much different would your college of career, how much different would your college career have been different today than it was when you played and started off? Like, I can't see you staying at South Dakota. I can't believe I said that. I can't see you staying at South Dakota as long as you did with the transfer portal now and NIL and all those things. If you could go back and kind of look at history as it played out for you, if you were in today's timeline, how do you think it would have played out?
And the answer is step one, invest in Apple stock.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Oh, my gosh. That's what I would do. But, dude, if they had deals like they had right now, oh, my God, my life would be so different. And not that I would, you know, change what my life is, like my kids and all that stuff. But, dude, I was the only thing in South Dakota.
Oh, like, yeah. We know.
I would have had so many deals. It has been crazy. And then for the NFL stuff, you would last longer. It's just the rules are so different to where you could wear Guardian hats. You don't have to tuck your shirt in. You don't have to do this. You don't have to do that. It's so many different things to where now it used to be looked at crazy if you celebrate. Now it's expected. And then everybody does it. You don't get to hit no more at practices. You don't get to do this. They're trying to make it longevity for all these players. So, yeah, if I was back in college, NIL deals, transfer portal, you could just jump right in all that stuff if you want to go somewhere else. But here's the flip side to that. That transfer portal is a killer for these athletes coming out of high school.
True.
Because you may be a good athlete, but guess what that coach is waiting on? Well, I tried to recruit this person, you know,
but
last year.
Doesn't that help out the South? I only have like 10 seconds left. Doesn't that help out the South Dakotas of the world?
It does. I think so too. South Dakotas of the world. Yeah, it does.
All right. You were an All-American there, and of course, you're an All-American with us all the time too. So thank you, Jamal.
Well, I do appreciate it.
And you didn't spill any tea on me. That's why I like
Thanks,
you.
Man. I appreciate
Goodbye,
it.
Goodbye, Jamal.
Next time, spill more tea on Andy.
Don't spill any tea on me. Goodbye, my friend.
I want to, believe me.
I know
see
you
my
do.
Man.
Goodbye, Jamal White.
Take it easy, Jamal. Thanks.
You can watch him on Spectrum News 1 immediately following Browns games. He's got the postgame report there. So, and, of course, former Browns running back and, of course, All-American at South Dakota.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I kind of need just a tiny little break here. So I want to talk to you about something I heard on the morning show today. And I'm like, I'm trying to figure it out. So here, and I'm curious because you said that we were talking about something before the show today and you brought up this. So these are all going to kind of marry together. 216-474-0092. My neighbors already have Christmas stuff up. Is that crazy?
Really?
Seem early?
Dude, all right. Is it plugged in and turned on?
Yes.
You can
see the trees in the window.
That's early. So, like, I am all for if you right now are like our house, we had Halloween decorations out.
I still have Halloween stuff in front
of us. I still do, too. And I think I'm still in the clear. I don't think we've, like, overextended our bounds or anything like that by having the Halloween decorations out. But I'm thinking either this weekend, definitely next weekend at the earliest, I'm going to put it all back in. I have no issue if you put your Christmas decorations up now and then just don't turn them on. Just because it's like, okay, I want to get these out while the weather is nice. I don't want, you know, to be out there when the blizzard is going in 20 degree, you know, weather. I'm up on the ladder doing a, you know, doing Christmas vacation with Clark Griswold. Like, I understand if you're like, I don't want to do that. Let's get it up now while it's nice out. I am all in on that one. Just don't turn them on. Just don't turn them on. But more than anything else, like, I think I've become soft as I've gotten older.
Oh, look at you. Don't get off his lawn.
I think I've become softer, where I'm also like, as much as I'm like, don't turn them on, I'm also like, if it makes you smile to come home at night and have the Christmas decorations on, then turn them on. And then life is oh so short. Do the things that put a smile on your face. I used to be very hardened on this, and now I've become like, eh. If it makes you happy, do it. It's not hurting anybody. It's not hurting me. I'll just drive by and go, oh, that's a little early, and then keep driving.
All right, so what do you truly, I mean, I hear what you're saying, but truly, and help us out on this too if you want to, 216-474-0092. When should your Halloween stuff be down by, and when can you, like, we normally put stuff up for the holidays around Thanksgiving, right after Thanksgiving. That's what we do. Kids love it. I love it. It's fun.
Oh, absolutely.
But Thanksgiving is like the time to do it. It's like the official start.
Right. Usually, yeah. Black Friday, I always had friends who were like, Black Friday, the Christmas stuff gets up. You know, that's when we do it. Day after Thanksgiving, get the tree up, get everything going, get the lights on, get all of that stuff. It's Christmas season. Let's go. You know, I had a friend who always used to say, let me get one helping of turkey before Santa's red rear end shows up.
Well, you know? He is it in New York. I mean, he does take his time to get there. So
he does. It takes.
He's at the end of the parade. I see him every year. The guy's totally busy, but yet somehow, some way, figures out a way on Thanksgiving to be the last guy in the parade.
But I mean, we've hit the point now.
He's the anchor man of the parade.
We weren't even at Halloween, and you were getting Christmas commercials. Like, you weren't even at Halloween, and the certain big box stores were packing up all that stuff and throwing it all off to the side because they couldn't get the Christmas stuff in early enough.
Hody, you're probably already right there. What do you got?
I was going to say, a lot of retail stores start selling Christmas stuff like late October, I've come to notice in recent weeks.
I can't get there soon enough.
Oh, yeah. And then they also like bargain off a lot of the Halloween stuff. If you want to get like good quality stuff for the holidays, do it after the holidays and then get it ready for next year. It's really cool.
Look at you.
Look at
the little plan aheader guy. Look at he's growing up right before our eyes.
Some people play chess. Some people play Hungry Hungry Hippos. That's chess right there, kids.
Some people play chess. Some people play checkers. I play backgammon.
Okay, well, you're giving this great wisdom to everybody. I'm just curious. Last year, how much Christmas stuff did you buy after the 25th?
I bought a good handful of stuff, actually, you on really the 26th did? And 27th. It was really good deals.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I do it all ahead of time.
Like, what'd you get?
I got a little snowman plush decoration for the house on the 27th, and now we can put that out during Christmas time. I got a little Rudolph, the red-nosed reindeer toy. I got I'm very into Christmas, so like I take a lot of the decoration seriously. I got a little stuffed Christmas tree. It's not that big. It's about this big, but I got that on like the 28th. It's a good bargain to find that stuff.
Really? I wouldn't have known. I wouldn't have known. What was the guy that wanted to be a dentist?
Oh, Hermie.
Hermie, okay. So there was a time there, like especially when the kids were little, we had all of the characters from that. Like we had Rudolph. We had, who else is in there? The Abominable Snowman.
Of course.
I love all those things. But for some reason,
how do I remember all of this stuff? And on our conference call, I couldn't remember what the hell I wrote down for topics.
Yeah, that's true. That's a bad thing.
What is happening?
So for some reason, I don't know why, when the dogs were puppies, they were attracted to Hermie. He got shredded.
Oh, that poor guy.
He got shredded. So I got to try to find a new one of those this year. But otherwise, I mean, our kids totally into that. Or maybe I was totally into it.
But yeah, I think this weekend we're going to try to get the Halloween stuff down. I don't think I'm putting the Christmas stuff up yet. It feels mildly early. But again, like,
is there a point where you should say to your neighbor, though, dude, Halloween stuff's got to go, man. It's already November 7th. Is it this weekend? You got to walk up to him and say,
seeing as though the Halloween stuff's still up in our establishment, nobody's come up to us yet saying, hey, we're going to get that out there. I don't think we're there yet.
Yeah, but should you say something?
Like June.
Like, but are you a jerk? Are you a jerk if you go up to somebody like the January folks that have the Christmas stuff up? Like, it's almost February and you still see their stuff outside.
Right.
I would never. Yo, you'll say something?
No. I have my stuff up at least a Martin Luther King Day, if not longer. And that's just because I'm lazy. And it's like, I'll get there. We'll do it when it's nice out.
Hody?
Dan essentially fed off the point I was going to say. I have all my Christmas stuff up till January 31st every year. It's a tradition at our house.
Oh, that's
till
awesome.
The 31st? All right, I get it.
I guess it's into the next year, but you know what I mean.
Here's what I'll say. If you've got the guts to write about it on Facebook or on social media, then you should have the guts to say it to somebody's face if you think their decorations are out too long. Is that a fair rule to live by?
I feel like that should be the message of all social medias. If you can't say it to somebody's face, don't send it. I've said that forever. It's like, you know, don't hide behind your keyboard.
All right. This makes me feel like I got to get that Halloween stuff off the lawn pretty quick.
I think you're fine.
You think so?
Heck yeah.
Nah, it's going away. I'm going to get rid of it today.
Again, who are we hurting? Who is this hurting? Who is this bothering? And is it really bothering you? I feel like that's the question in all forms of life we don't ask ourselves enough. Is this really hurting anybody, or are you just mildly annoyed? Like, it's like, fine, it's not hurting me. Everything's fine. No one is in a worse place because you've decided to do something.
All right, I'm going to go back to a question that we brought up last segment with Jamal White. And that question is, at the end of the season, who's going to take the fall for what happens to the Browns? Is it going to be Andrew Berry? Is it going to be Kevin Stefanski? Is it going to be both of them? Or perhaps none of them? Who will end up taking the fall for the Browns when this thing's all said and done, if the course remains the same? 216-474-0092. 216-474-0092. Probably could throw Ken Dorsey in there, too. All right, so we will talk about that coming up in just a couple minutes. I did ask this question when we went to break. At the end of the season, let's just say, I don't even know if I want to put a record on it, but let's just say the course stays the same as what we saw in the first half of the season, so... What do you think? Three wins? I'll be optimistic. Three more wins this year? Is that optimistic?
Yeah.
Okay. Three wins gets you to five.
I mean, optimistic would you can maybe say six.
You want to be totally optimistic? We'll go 6-11. That's what the end of the season says. If they go 6-11 on the year, does someone have to take the fall? And if that's the case, who's taking the fall? Is it Andrew Berry? Is it Kevin Stefanski? Is it Ken Dorsey? Is it both? Is it none? What is it? Dan, who takes the fall?
I think it'll end up being Andrew Berry. And it's just because you can look at what has taken place with Andrew Berry and the way that these drafts have gone and go, okay, Greg Newsom's a keeper. MJ Emerson's a keeper. Grant Delpit's a keeper. Cedric Tillman looks like a keeper right now. If it keeps going the direction it's going, that guy's a keeper. After that, I mean, who else are we looking at and saying, hey, that dude's a keeper? I mean, okay, hopefully Isaiah McGuire takes off. He ends up being a keeper. But, like, boy, if you start going down the line right now and building who the keepers are that have come out of these drafts, it gets a little ugly.
Hmm. I thought
DeJuan
about
Jones is a keeper, but, like, now we're at seven. You've had four drafts, and we're looking at seven guys. I mean, that's a rough way to live life. And as much as you want to shake his hand and go, hey, great job on the Amari Cooper trade, at least right now, it's not a good job on the Elijah Moore trade. And you gave up more for Elijah Moore than you did to get Amari Cooper.
I just think when we look at this at the end of the day, it's really like the easiest guy to put the blame on is Ken Dorsey. I just kind of see it that way. Don't you?
Yeah.
Ken's the easiest guy
that's in here. But the problem is you've, you know, once again, when it comes to the head coach, and maybe the Browns are operating differently. You blew up special teams and brought in a new coordinator there. You blew up the defensive coordinator from the original guy who was brought in 4 years ago, got somebody else in there. You blew up the offensive coordinator and brought in somebody else for that one, and the coach gave up the play calling to said offensive coordinator. There's nothing left to blow up. There's no other lever that you could pull besides the big lever.
Paul DePodesta seems to be taking heat right now. And if you go listen to the It's Always Game Day in Cleveland podcast, Daryl Ryder puts a lot of the blame on him. At least listen to what he has to say and see if that's
what he does.
And that's a part of his argument.
So that puts heat on him from the fan base, but does that really put heat on him in the organization?
I got to believe he's got some input. He was the guy that wanted Kevin Stefanski the first time when they didn't hire him. right? And then they came around a year later and did hire him. I'm not ready to say goodbye to Kevin Stefanski. I know a lot of fans are. I do think there's parts like the first drive of the second half in last week's game against San Diego reminded me of the first drive that we've seen so many times since he's taken over as head coach. Unfortunately, the ball got tipped and it ended up as an interception in the end zone. I don't know that every quarterback executes it that way. And I know that we're all sitting here saying, well, you know, Ken Dorsey was calling the plays there, so why are you giving Kevin Stefanski credit for it? Because it looked like a Stefanski first drive. It did. I can't tell the difference. The play calling doesn't seem that different to me. Does it seem that different to you? Well, again, I think Dorsey is looking at the same menu that Kevin had, and he's just saying, you know what? Not going with the chicken wings for an order of this time. I'm going with spin dip.
We're two games in. You need more evidence before you sit back there and go, okay, this looks different. This is happening different. But through all the tape guys that you talk to, the people who really dig deep into this whole thing, they're saying it's the same offense. It's the same general concepts. It's the same general ideas. And, you know, that's the problem. I think it's Barry because you could point to it and go, look, the guys that you have brought in to supplement this roster in an inexpensive manner have not produced at a level that was needed. Take care of yourself. I mean, that's the thing that we're there. Like, okay, Denzel Ward, that was a John Dorsey pick. You re-signed him. Good job. Myles Garrett, that was a John Dorsey pick. You re-signed him. Good job. Wyatt Teller, that was a John Dorsey pick. You re-signed him. Good job. Joe Bitonio, guys might be going to the Hall of Fame. You just re-signed him. Good job. Like, Jack Conklin, that was one of his moves. Okay. He's been banged up a whole bunch. Really can't point to him and go, oh my gosh, Andrew Berry, what a horrible move. He's been hurt. That's like, man, that's just bad luck. And then the ultimate one hanging over your head. Four, who's in charge of making that move? And nobody knows because they'll all continue to say the same thing, which is that we made it together as a group.
At the end of the season, who's going to take the fall? Nobody, maybe? A couple people? You tell me. Demos is in Shaker Heights. Demos.
Hey,
what's happening, Demos?
Good, how are you, man?
Hey. So I work in the field of analytics, okay? And it's more in the business side of things, not the playing side. Mm-hmm. But whoever is in charge of the analytics, and I suspect it's Dee Podesta, he's been there long enough, and the point of using the analytics is using the data to help make better decisions about things, like the whole going for it on fourth down all the time, right? Mm-hmm. That's completely based in that realm.
Right.
So for this team and these players to have had this, you know, if you look at the entire Haslam era that has been guided by analytics, supposedly, it's failing. And if he's the head of it, then other NFL teams that use a, you know, maybe a different form or style of analytics, they're doing better than we are. And if that's where this is coming from, if the head, you know, if the fish rots from the head first, it might be Dee Podesta, and that's what I would look at myself, because you just can't. Here's the problem with, like, analytics. You only have 53 players, okay? From a sample size alone, and you make big sweeping decisions about groups of players or type of player, and you put them in this bucket, and you think that all these pieces together are going to work. His style isn't working. He's got to go.
Well, let me add this, because, and again, thank you for the phone call, Demos. Yeah. We love when you call. Daryl Ryder said this again yesterday on the podcast, and he put this on X the other day too, that if you want to look at Dee Podesta's numbers, after the 1-31 start over his first 2 years, the team that went 13-8-1 over the next 2 years, and then they went 39-37 from 20-24. That also includes two playoff seasons and one playoff victory. So, I mean, you're looking at the numbers that he's given you after that 1-31 start, and is that enough? Because, you know, should you be over 500? Is that effective? Does that mean that the job has been successful? Is Dee Podesta the answer?
Okay, fine. Congrats. You know, you got your pound of flesh. I don't know what Dee Podesta changes by saying, okay, this guy is out, when I don't know what he does. That's the problem of Paul Dee Podesta, that everybody's screaming about, oh, it's got to be Dee Podesta. He's got to go. He's the one that's the problem. It's like, do you know that? Because I don't know what the hell he does. He could be in charge of football operation analytics. He could be in charge of the analytics involving concession stands. He could be in charge of the business analytics that comes from the TV
money. You know
money.
That he's...
He
could be, come on. You know he's involved in...
He could be in charge of the Haslam Sports Group analytics. You don't know. You flat out don't know. You're just pointing at something and going, him, he's the problem because I don't know what he does. That's the problem I have with Dee Podesta going, well, that's the one that's got to be fired. Okay, good. You got a pound of flesh. Maybe that gives you the pound of flesh, but he might not have anything to do with what the Browns are doing right now and may have more to do with what the Milwaukee Bucks are doing or may have more to do with the Columbus Crew.
I don't know. There was talk at the Greenbrier. At the Greenbrier, Jimmy Haslam had said, and I asked Daryl this again yesterday because I wasn't in the scrum for this. He said that his contract had not yet been renewed and was not being renewed at that point. Now, I don't know where they're at this point in the game. And like I say, it's only the truth until you step in front of the microphone when you walk off the podium.
Right.
The truth can change 2 seconds later. But he is the chief strategy officer. That's what his job is. That's what he's done before.
Right. What does that even mean?
Chief strategy officer. Well, don't you think that means long-term strategic planning in all aspects of the game? I'm just saying. 216-474-0092. Let's bring in Seth DeVolve next, former Browns tight end. We will come back to the subject here, so hang tight if you're on the phone lines. Baskin and Phelps with Dan Menigan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past 3 seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a 4th season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.